In association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Sundress. Today we're talking with writer John Hickman. There have been a lot of teaser images coming out from Marvel Comics regarding Hickman's Fantastic Four run. John's going to give us some background on what's been going on and what's to come. In fact, all the way up to issue 600. Yes, he's got a multi-year plan, and he gives us some of the details in this interview. We'll also talk about the Nick Fury book, Secret Warriors. More discussion and previews of the current arc and the stories to come. Plus, in April, Marvel debuts a new Hickman series about the origins of S.H.I.E.L.D., dating back centuries longer than a lot of people may have thought. All part of another interesting discussion here on Word Balloon. Today, it's brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. Now, in addition to the great discounts that you get at InStockTrades.com, up to 37% off the cover price, and, of course, their company discount comic book service for your monthly subscription needs, the companies are sponsoring the Summit City Comic Con, and that is happening on May 22nd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Grand Wayne Center on 120 West Jefferson Boulevard in Fort Wayne, Indiana. They have a great lineup coming to the Summit City Comic Con. Among the artists in attendance, you will be seeing Mike Norton, Chris Burnham, Art Baltazar, Matt Kent, Tim Seeley, Robert Atkins, Nate Powell, Ryan Stegman, and many more, with publisher involvement from Dark Horse, Boom, and Top Shelf. It's all happening on May 22nd, 2010. That's the Summit City Comic Con, $10 general admission. Hope to see you there. Many of your podcasting favorites are going to be there. Word Balloon will be there as well, and it should be a great day. That's the Summit City Comic Con, May 22nd, just $10 at the door.
As we were getting set up here, we were talking about the Fantastic Four, and we just finished what I guess you'd call an in-between arc. I don't know. What would you call these last two issues?
Just two issues, man. I mean, we're trying really hard not to do arcs on the FF. We're trying to do a different thing every month, and you know, from a collected perspective, you know, how the trades will get hammered out. You like to have some kind of meta theme that runs through the stories to kind of tie them all together, but this is much worse than what I was doing with Secret Warriors, where it's kind of impenetrable because the continuity is so heavy. This is much worse than that. This is just a 30-issue story. so we'll see how people like that or not. But the first thing was clearly kind of three issues, and that was a cohesive story. And then the next two were kind of standalone issues. And even though Dale is doing this Prime Elements arc, I mean, what we're calling it, it's really four standalone stories followed by two more standalone stories, and then a two-parter, and then something that's kind of a six-parter. And you know, we're building towards issue 600. We've got the 50th anniversary and issue 600 like within 3 months.
Wow.
So we may do, I think 597 or something like that is the 50th anniversary, or 598. I guess it depends which month it comes out. But we're going to do a couple of double-sized issues back-to-back, so the story is going to get really, really big. And
all right, now I'm confused by the numbering, because those aren't this year. Those are in 2013, obviously, then, right, or 2012?
2012, or the last month of 2011.
Yeah, okay. Like that. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. All right, wow, there you go, man. Good for you. Look at you. This is a multi-year project. I'm very interested to hear that.
Well, yeah, I mean, they asked me to pitch it. I pitched the fool out of it, so... You know, I gave him my little plan, and Tom seemed to dig it, and everybody at the first retreat I went to seemed to kind of like my enthusiasm and how far ahead I was. I had stuff laid out, and I think we're in good shape, man. It feels good. I mean, I don't really have any sense of whether something's good or bad. You know, when I'm doing it, and I really don't read anything I do after it comes out. So, I guess I'm supposed to look at some combination of sales and press and awards and stuff like that. But really, if I just kind of like it when I'm doing it, I'm okay. We'll see. That could get me fired shortly, but we'll see.
Well, I hope it comes through. And it's now, that's interesting, because then I look at what Ed's been doing on Cap, and you know, Matt, too, on Iron Man. it's across the street. You know, we're lucky if a creative team does stick around for 12 issues. And it looks like at Marvel, in a lot of cases, especially with the big toys, they are talking about multi-year plans and really sticking with a creative team for more than just 12 issues. Unless it's something special like, you know, Miller's Wolverine, Miller's Spider-Man, or even his FF, obviously.
Oh, well, if you've read a lot of stuff that Mark has said, I mean, he'll tell you that he only writes in 12 to 24 issue chunks. I mean, that's all he likes to do. I mean, and a lot of that comes from him just wanting to tell a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I think I'm more like that than I am like Brian is, or like Matt feels like he is on Iron Man, or Cap on, I mean, or Ed on Cap, where they're just, you know, they're just going, you know, and they're just letting the story take them where it takes them. I feel like I'm probably, I have a broader plan usually, or a more specific plan for a broader set of issues instead of just arcs. I don't know. I mean, I think the bottom line is Marvel's got some really good writers working for them, and they like giving us the jobs, and we tend to do a pretty good job of taking care of the properties, and that's the gig, right?
I like what's happening right now. I want to specify with 574 in terms of some clues as to what's coming in the future. That and, of course, the teaser image that Marvel released a couple weeks ago. And I wanted,
Sure, yeah.
So this is our chance to be the Zapruder film and really kind of examine some of the clues as much as you're willing to disclose.
Okay.
But we've got, and I want to get his name right because I always forget people's names, Bentley Whitman.
Yeah.
Yeah, going to Valerie at the end of the story with some prophetic words. And I'm getting to him right now. Here we go. So there will be a war between the four cities. The dead must not be forgotten. The future man must return to save the past. And all hope lies in doom. And there's some lovely Valerie art on the walls to illustrate all this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but that's not Bentley, though. That's
Tell me who that is, man.
That's Franklin from the future.
Oh, wow. Okay, see, I didn't even pick up on that. I'm a knucklehead.
That's why she calls him a retard. Happy birthday, retard, again. That's why she says that twice.
Wow. Oh, my God. Okay, that's even cooler.
Yeah.
See, I mean, that's the thing, man. I really think this issue could have easily been dismissed, and I thought I read it close enough, and clearly I didn't. That's great, man. Very cool. So, all right, kids, let's all pull out our 574s and give it a reread and really, like, kind of look that thing over. I mean, I certainly understood the big implication at the end that Franklin's got his mojo back.
Yeah, appears that way. Sure.
So certainly that's going to spill out into the future as well. I think the kids are easy to dismiss, and I think in the right hands, they become very interesting characters and matter to the family. It's always been about the four, and like any good sitcom or drama, sometimes when you add kids to the picture, sometimes that screws up the family dynamic. But I think in the right hands, the kids can be handled very well.
I think they're really, really important to selling the fact that it's a family book. I don't think they should be written as a team, and I think a lot of people do that. First of all, I loved what Mark did with Val. I thought that was very interesting, and that was something that as soon as I was reading his stuff to kind of prepare my pitch that really resonated with me, because kids are really interesting in that he set up that she was as smart as Reed, but you know the big thing there is that she's still a kid. So while she's as smart as Reed, she's still, you know, she's all id. I mean, she's more like Johnny in that she's not emotionally mature, and that she can't, you know, she can't make the kind of adult decisions, and she doesn't have a wide view, you know, a wide perspective of people in general. So, while she thinks like Reed, she acts like Johnny, which is really interesting. And that makes her precocious and dangerous in a lot of ways. Just like I think Franklin getting his powers back, I think a lot of people kind of forget with Franklin, too, that if he's a kid, you know, he's not going to be able to you know, with reality shaping powers, or however you want to loosely define what his power set is. You know, he shouldn't be able to consciously do everything because he just doesn't understand it. You know, I mean, and a lot of this is, if you talk to even really imaginative children, you'll find that their ideas are derivative of stuff that they've seen. You know, you have to be older to actually have really powerfully formative, not even original, but at least divergent ideas. And he doesn't have that yet. So I think his powers have been kind of used in the past as this omnipotent thing without any check. And I think that's a way around that, so that we can use, you know, just use all that and not be just a story killer. But, you know, the kids are a vital part. And, you know, Bentley, like you said earlier, and you know, when you said Bentley Whitman, you know, Kid Whitman's going to be around a good bit. I kind of hinted that Alex Power's going to be around a good bit. You know,
yeah, nice Power Pack reunion. I enjoyed seeing that, too.
Well, you know, the Baxter Building is a big place, and there's no reason for it to be mostly empty all the time. And, you know, we're going to fill it up. We've got a lot of really, really cool stuff. 579 is a story called The Future Foundation, and it's a kind of a kid story, and it's probably my favorite one so far. So.
Excellent. I see Namor on the wall, so I think he's coming up soon. And now I'm looking at the teaser panel that Eaglesham did.
Mm-hmm.
And
little high evolutionary, little mole man, little annihilus.
There you go.
Yeah, a lot of cool stuff there.
I see is that an ultimate nullifier in Reed's hand or no?
No.
Oh, okay. See, I don't know my tech, my Fantastic Four tech as well as I should.
That's just a Dale box.
Okay. Like a Kirby box?
Yeah.
Very nice. By the way, looking at the teaser image, I see no problem with the fact that Reed has muscles nowadays in Dale's hands. And I've heard that come up in other blogs and podcasts in terms of since when did Reed bulk up? And it's like, why wouldn't he? He's got a pliable body.
Well, when Dale and I got on the phone originally talking about what we wanted to do with the book, one of the key choices that we made was we wanted to... our interpretation of the FF to be Jack Kirby driven and not John Byrne driven. So if you look at the old art, you know, Reed was never a skinny looking guy. I mean, he was never that in Jack Kirby's FF. And, you know, that's the reason why we went that way.
If I haven't said this to you before, I know I've said it on other podcasts. I think that Dale, especially in the eyes, I see a lot of Kirby in the way he draws Reed's eyes and other FF members' eyes.
He's trying to mix up what he's this kind of superhero Norman Rockwell thing, which is kind of what he calls it, that he did on JSA and over at DC.
Mm-hmm.
But he's mixing in a lot of Kirby in there, and it's what's coming out was it's not what I was expecting the art to look like. I don't think it's what anybody else was expecting out of Dale, but it's certainly, I'm happy. I'm a happy guy with how the book looks. I mean, he's doing people say, you know, he's doing the work of his career. They say that about artists all the time, but in this case, I think it's pretty true. I think this stuff kind of dwarfs anything that he'd done previously.
I agree, and I think Paul Mount's coloring the book is doing his usual excellent job.
I actually don't think it's his usual work. You know, because Dale's working. I mean, this is just straight pencils, and Paul is having to do so much more work on the book than some of his other gigs that he has, I know. But Paul is knocking it out of the park. I mean, the palette that Paul's using to make the book pop, I mean, it's definitely not what he was doing previously, and it's not even what he does whenever he colors Neil.
Is he taking the role of an inker, or, I mean, explain it to me.
Dale's penciling incredibly tight. Everything is pretty clearly defined that Paul is getting, but you get more of a neutral look with the pencils whenever they're not inked, and so it's if you're not careful, it turns a little bit too painterly, or the color overpowers it, or either you darken the line art too much, and it really just doesn't look that good. And Paul has just found the perfect balance there with Dale's stuff, and then on top of that, he's kind of doing this really powerful primal kind of primary color set that just pops like crazy. And I think the book is just it looks like some kind of fantastic journey thing, which is it's what the book's supposed to be.
Looks like we're going to be seeing a lot of our favorite villains from both the prophecy of older Franklin and also the teaser image as well, and we've mentioned a couple of them already. Namor, Doom.
Well, what we're setting up in 575 to 578, which is the next four issues,
mm-hmm.
is one of the problems whenever I took over FF was very clearly, Doom, Namor, the Inhumans, Galactus. I mean, all the Annihilus,
mm-hmm.
they had just done the Annihilation Wave and all that kind of stuff. And the Negative Zone. I mean, all this stuff was being used in other areas of the Marvel Universe.
But true.
And not like in small ways, in huge, massive stories.
Civil War, it was where they were keeping all the heroes on ice?
Yeah. So it's one of the first things I did was I was like, look, I can't just jump in here and try and use all that stuff. Because, that's the natural instinct,
mm-hmm.
right? I've got to do it in such a way that it builds momentum within the book, or then it's just, look, loud noises, kind of thing, which is terrible storytelling. And so I've built up this kind of mythology behind bringing all of that stuff back into the book. So that's kind of what the next four issues are. Reintroducing Annihilus, reintroducing kind of the Inhumans and stuff under the sea and things under the earth and whatnot.
How much of what has happened in Dark Reign and Civil War? I mean, you obviously were responsible for the Dark Reign arc during, or was it Secret Wars or Dark Reign that your miniseries before taking over the book proper? Was it which umbrella was that under?
They were both Dark Reign books, I think.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Now that you ask, I should know this stuff.
Well, that's what I was trying to remember, too.
I'm pretty sure that they were both labeled Dark Reign books. I mean, obviously, Fantastic Four Dark Reign was a Dark Reign book.
Right, well, yeah, okay.
I'm pretty sure that Secret Warriors shipped with the big Dark Reign thing stuck on the top of the books.
Okay, I was just wondering how much of that was going to figure into the, how much the characters in the FF book will reflect what has been happening in the outside Marvel universe?
In some ways a lot. Listen, do you think that there's, credibility? You know how people say that books don't feel important if they don't tie into the larger Marvel events?
I've heard that. I don't agree with it, but yeah, I have heard that.
Yeah, I mean, we hear this a lot. The books don't feel significant or relevant if they don't tie into the event.
Sure, that was the wrap on Mark's arc in a lot of ways, I think.
I guess. It could have been that it just wasn't as good as Ultimates, and that's a bummer because, Ultimates was pretty awesome, and people were expecting more of that, and, they kind of went in a different direction or whatnot. There's a lot of good stuff in that arc I like. I can understand why people weren't happy at the end, but, he was sick and things happen and whatnot.
Yeah, well, but still, I think overall, I really enjoyed a lot of the directions that he went into. I think you've integrated some of those ideas, obviously, into your work as well. But yeah, let's stick with this: what's happening in a book versus what's happening in the outside universe. You go ahead with your thought.
Well, I understand that that's probably true from a retailer's perspective and from a broad kind of reader perspective. I think that it may be a little bit more complicated than how it gets spun, though. I think books don't feel important when they don't tie into bigger events it's not just that they don't feel relevant. I don't think that a lot of these books are doing a good job of making things seem important in their books. And I think that's something that we're going to be, in that, to answer your question, I think that's something we're going to be playing with in the FF.
Okay.
I think I beat everybody to the heroic age, actually. No, I mean, before I even went to the first summit where we talked about, look, this is what we're doing next, and Joe sent out an email to everybody saying no more event kind of deals, and we're going to go back to, you know, better days kind of storytelling stuff, and you know, I'd already decided that that's how the FF should be. You know, it felt right, and I'd already kind of written some of it, and you know, not yay, I'm first. You know, bullshit like that. I don't care about that. What I'm saying is that I think he's right, and I think we're on to something, and I think that the FF is kind of a perfect vehicle for a book like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that the book's going to be relevant just because of thematically some stuff that's going on, as well as storytelling stuff. We're not going to be doing a lot of these massive kind of event things, so there's no real, there's nothing going to be, there's not a whole lot to be tying into, you know, one another.
I understand.
You know, out of how we label books, maybe, and stuff like that, but.
Good, I'm glad to hear that. I think you're right, and I think Solve Everything is a perfect example of that. As opposed to trying to solve all the universe's problems, we realize that what matters most is what's happening in his home and with his family. And he chose family above, you know, the big picture.
Sure, yeah. It's the whole, you know, I think there's a line in there about being a good person or being a great person, and which one do you really want to be? And you know, Reed's a pretty special guy, but at the end of the day, he wants to be a good man.
It really has become one of my favorite Reed stories, and I really think very immediately your story is up there with a lot of great arcs, because it is a really good look at Reed, and it's so easy to give him that usual just smartest man in the room, you know, label and leave it at that, and we forget about the human side, and that he's not just solving big problems, he's doing it because he wants his family and he wants them together.
Sure.
Very cool, man. Now, as we're recording this, Marvel released an image to Newsarama, and it's a teaser for 576. And I always love these, like, classic Marvel lines, like, you know, Enter Doctor Doom, or When Titans Clash, and this one, Tell Me Who Speaks for Man.
I honestly have no idea what we're talking about. what's the cover? What's the picture?
Well, it's all of them in scuba diving outfits.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
We got a close up of Sue.
I did write that. Now this is this issue takes place in Antarctica, and there's you know what Lake Vostok is?
No, go tell me.
This freshwater lake that they found that's you know, deep beneath
the ice,
beneath the surface of Antarctica, and it's a million years old, and it hasn't broken air in that long. I mean, it's completely preserved.
Wow.
And you know, they do all this stuff, like they'd like some of the largest ice core samples in the world that they've ever taken. It's been done at this research station, which was, you know, I think put up by the Russians in the 50s, maybe, I can't remember. I did all the research and now it's gone. But anyway, it's there's something in the water is kind of the premise for the story, and we find out what that is, and it has major repercussions for you know, for the underwater world of the Marvel Universe. It's, think of it like this: there's a section of the ocean that's been cut off from the rest of the ocean for a million years, and while parts of the regular ocean has developed and all this kind of stuff. This has been a place that's followed a parallel but evolutionary separate track underneath the ice. And so hilarity ensues.
The another mention in the blurb, and I don't know if this came from you or from Marvel Editorial, but they, of course, mentioned the old Kings of Atlantis, and it sounds like it's almost like a Pangaea section of the ocean that, as you say, has been untouched by time. And, yeah, this obviously, if we're underwater, we're going to be dealing, you know, the Submariner can't be far away.
Yeah, it's yeah, that's a good analogy as far as the Pangaea thing. You know, it's all part of setting up the big pieces of the Fantastic Four that are being used, like Namor's an X-Men all the time now. And Matt and I got on the phone and kind of hammered this out, and I told him what I was planning on doing, and you know, he gave me his blessing, and he thought it, you know, it makes things cooler for him as well. So yeah, I mean, this is a Namor piece. We're not saying that Namor's in the issue. We're not saying that it, how it affects him, but this is definitely moving in that direction. And it's an interesting story. A lot of AIM scientists in this one. Do you like all the derivative AIM names?
Uh-huh.
Like, what's the one that... There's been a couple of them. I came up with AINT, though. Advanced Ideas Not Terrorist, the pacifist wing of AIM. They won't be showing up in my book, but that's like a power pack idea. There you go.
No, I always love shit like that. Bob from Hydra, of course, and things like that. But or even sure. The derivatives of MODOK that everyone seems to be able to come up with. So
yeah, that's a great character. I'd love to use him too, but I think he's busy doing other stuff.
So. I want to shift to Secret Wars because... Minutia is, I think, the middle name of Secret Warriors in a good way. I'm trying to put together this whole Leviathan thing and your big wheel. And I think I love the graphs. I've loved them since the Nightly News and all of your other books as well, that you've had that kind of meta information that have supplemented your stories and only made the universes that you're playing in a little bit more detailed and more interesting. Is Leviathan this overarching intelligence group that was there before the Cold War, before S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra? Is this correct?
No. Well, kind of. Leviathan is a third organization. And that's the, you know, them kind of being rebooted is what this third arc, Wake the Beast, is all about. They're enemies of Nick Fury's, and they're enemies of Hydra. And just like Hydra is enemies of Fury and Leviathan, it's World War II. It's communist and the Allies and the Axis. It's it's the three-headed dragon that kind of kicked off the last half of the last century, which is the Marvel Universe. So. It's going to be really interesting stuff.
Are we going to see Seeds of Leviathan in your upcoming S.H.I.E.L.D. miniseries as well?
I don't know. Maybe. that depends on... What happens in that S.H.I.E.L.D. book depends entirely on how we launch.
Okay.
I mean, we have to be a little bit reactive. The market is a little finicky, and... I'm going to have some very difficult decisions to make if we launch poorly. I'm going to have some very difficult decisions to make if we launch very well. I just don't know. I can't tell you at this point what's going to happen in issue 7 of S.H.I.E.L.D. because I don't know that there's going to be an issue 7 of S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, we could... I mean, don't get me wrong. I think we'll launch better than stuff like Voodoo and S.W.O.R.D. did. Because we're getting a little bit more of a marketing push, and there was a little bit more preamble to the book being created. I think we got better art, and I think we've got a little bit more palatable story that's broader and can, you know, appeal to more people. But certainly we're very aware of the market and the climate and what we have to go up against. But... you know, to answer your question, I don't know. Maybe.
Okay, I can appreciate that. I'm that's too bad because, and you know, I'll admit I haven't been reading S.W.O.R.D., but I have been reading Dr. Voodoo, and it's been interesting and unfortunate to see that what I think have been some strong ideas, because of initial sales not being what, you know, Marvel was hoping for, a lot of these stories had to kind of stop, you know, with a single arc, as opposed to getting further developed. And, you know, in the case of Voodoo, I think Dr. Voodoo will continue to be explored in the Avenger storylines coming up, whatever they may be, as the Heroic Age, I guess, evolves. But, I I'm sure Sword will find its way for its story to be told. But,
those two books are really, and see, and that's part of the problem is broad strokes start to paint everything that's happening in the market, and Sword and Voodoo are two entirely different kind of animals. They've been trying to launch a Sword book since Joss.
Sure, yeah, since he came up with it.
You know, it's just been
timing.
Yeah, well, it's not timing. It's. Shield started off as a Sword pitch.
Oh.
Before they got to me on the book, they went to Paul Cornell to try and do a Sword book. It's just sometimes these things don't fit, or sometimes they turn into other things, or just because we're dominated by market forces doesn't mean that the creative process is entirely devoid of rearing its ugly head in the middle of these things. And if Kieran's book would have, and it is fantastic, and he is a wonderful writer and just a cool as shit guy, no doubt about it. If his book would have launched in the middle of the Astonishing X-Men run, that book would have been fine.
Makes sense.
Okay, it's just that was a timing thing, and just not being able to make it work like they wanted to, and that just happens sometimes, and it sucks. But Kieran's going on to bigger and better things, and he's going to be perfectly fine, and he'll wow us on some other book. Voodoo is different, I think, and this is of course purely my opinion. I just don't think that it's regardless of the push that he got in New Avengers. It's not a giant character. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it was always going to be difficult. You know, it's like, I don't know, if I wanted to do a Falcon miniseries, you know? I mean, cool character, hell yes, right?
True.
But it's just difficult in the market to launch a mid-list book because Marvel doesn't have mid-list. We don't have a mid-list at all at Marvel, really. I'm hoping that digital stuff is going to help that a lot, and that Marvel's going to be able to have and be able to sustain a mid-list, and the story there might be shit if Sword and Dr. Voodoo would have launched 6 months later. They'd be fine because there's an ancillary revenue stream to keep them alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know. This year's going to be really interesting sales-wise, and I didn't mean to go off on a tangent there about that, but...
No, but I think it informs... You know, again, what flies, you know, what does fly through the market and what doesn't, when, you know, granted, there's a smaller but critical audience that does see, you know, a story and say, hey, you know, there's something special there. Why doesn't it, you know, why doesn't it flourish, or why isn't it given the chance to flourish? And, I mean, this is not just current things. I mean, you can go back to things like, was it Chris Priest when he had The Crew?
Sure.
Perfect example of that. Excellent story and really interesting idea. Just, you know, unfortunately didn't get the time. And, I mean, God, look at his Panther run. And, I mean, there's a case where you know, management really did stick behind him on what was going on in the Panther. He comes up with The Crew, which I think is an incredibly interesting idea on its own. And then, yeah, unfortunately, six issues were done. Or even, Bruce Jones. Mm-hmm. Did a Kingpin miniseries. And it was an excellent idea, and it had a real Sopranos feel to it. And it never really, you know, got the chance to flourish and stuff. Just like a failed TV series, you know, it's the same kind of thing.
Look at, those are fine examples, but you can even take something like someone like Warren Ellis, who's clearly, you know...
Big gun.
Very, very talented, very commercial. But you look at, you know, Next Wave and New Universal...
You bet.
And, you know, those books not succeeding. I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, I know more New Universal is going to come out at some point in time, but, you know, obviously it wasn't as big as they wanted it to be, and they had to move them over some bigger stuff, or whatever happens, whatever the story is. But clearly, I mean, two fantastic books.
Yes.
Fantastic books, and they just, you know, didn't work. And, you know, that just happens, man. There's a reason, you know, the Mac didn't win. It didn't, you know?
Sure. So,
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. So, you know, long way around. Maybe we'll see some Leviathan stuff in S.H.I.E.L.D., but we'll see a ton of it in the rest of Secret Warriors.
We had to take a break for a second because I had to reset my equipment, and when we came back, I'm very interested to hear from John as we take a moment tangent before we get back to Secret Warriors, that John is very excited about a writer returning to the Legion of Superheroes. Why don't you tell me about it?
I'm pretty excited that the guy got fired as president or whatever of DC, and they, as compensation, they're going to give him, they're going to give me my childhood back.
I'm with you, man. That's so funny. That's so, I saw the last couple times I've seen Levitz at conventions, I always end with, "It's great to talk to you," and I always tell you this: I wish you were writing the Legion. And he's like, "Thank you. You're not alone." And he's I think it's great too. And I mean, Jeff's done a great job with the Legion and really bringing it back to where it belongs. And I think now that it finally is part of the Superman story as it always should have been, let's give the keys back. Helen, for that matter, I'd like to see Mark Waid write this Legion as well. But first, let's see Paul write it for a while, and I'm looking forward to his run as well. I think it's great.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty jacked. I mean, I don't know if you can go home again. You know, I don't know if it'll work.
Yeah, because and I'll even be honest, his JSA arc that he did as that book wrapped up was I wasn't crazy about that, and you know he certainly had his years writing the JSA as well in the 70s, and I was reading that stuff as a kid and enjoying it.
But, I don't know if I don't know. I read the Great Darkness Saga again. I don't know, maybe 2 years ago. I just
put it
in the box and read it, and I thought it held up pretty good. And then I read you know the first 40 issues of the Baxter series.
Oh yeah,
that started back up, and I saw that held up wonderfully well. So I don't know if you can go home again, but I know I'm going to be there. I'm taking a trip with them.
I'm with you, man. And yeah, who is Sensor Girl and all of that stuff? And no, I thought that was really great stuff. And then also, I loved the Levitz run. I also loved the Giffen 5 years later stuff.
Now the 5 years later run is the best Legion's ever been. But see, the problem with that is that you can only do that once.
I agree.
Because you basically destroyed everything. To tell this, it's really the last Legion of Superheroes story. I mean, they would never call it that. And it's really the adult Legion is what it is.
Absolutely.
It's all those little adult Legion stories that they used to tell, you know, look through the little time bubble thing and get a glimpse into the future. You know, and so, but that's what it really was. And, I mean, it's my favorite Legion run, but... But, you know, we can't have that again, which we can't.
No, I understand.
I'm all jazzed for the other. So.
Very funny, man. Well, all right, back to Secret Warriors, because...
Sorry, let's talk about Marvel.
That's all right. I'm always appreciative when somebody from the other side of the street is willing to say, "Hey, yo, you know what's going on in the next yard? I kind of like that." And I kind of like, sometimes I got to push Brian, especially when Brian likes to, you know, throw the occasional snowball. It's like, all right, now tell me something nice about it. What's happening across the street? Don't you know? So that's good. I'm glad to hear that. And we all read everybody else's stuff. Come on. Well, back to the Secret Warriors, though. I know I've told you this in our own conversations, but I am thrilled that John Garrett is an active player in the Marvel Universe again, because I have missed that guy. One of my favorite characters to come out of, obviously, Electra Assassin. I don't know if he was a character before that story, but, you know...
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they wanted him to be Nick Fury. I could be wrong there, but I think the original intent was that they wanted him to be Fury. But
interesting, because, he was awesome, and he was such a great 80s character. And also, I just love that the design that you guys have for him as well. He pretty much looks like Michael McDonald, or like he stepped out of a Doobie Brothers session to rejoin the S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, I think we'll get to his stuff. He gets a lot bigger, and he's in the arc after Wake the Beast is the last ride of the Howling Commandos, and he's in that a little bit more.
Ooh, that sounds ominous, the last ride of the Howling Commandos.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's It seems solid. I mean, I'm in the middle of writing it right now, and
They're getting too old for this shit. Say it ain't so.
No, it's nothing like that. It's really cool, actually. It takes place one night whenever all the old Hal and Commandos get back together and have dinner together.
Okay.
So all the old guys and the new guys are there. Rebel Ralston shows up, and Izzy Cohen shows up, and
cool.
I mean, the other guys are dead, obviously.
Is Dino dead?
We're saying that Dino Minnelli and Pinky Pinkerton have passed. We have to. Some of them can't make it, so
we have to look to Jesse Alexander doing any future flashback stories if we ever want to relive their exploits.
I guess so.
Okay,
but there's a reason for that, and
okay.
It takes place during the dinner, and some stuff that happens right after the dinner, and then stuff that happens a couple of weeks after the dinner, and it all ties together. Captain America shows up. Steve Rogers gets together because
very cool.
World War II guys, and it's one of those stories that it's a lot of fun. It's one of those arcs that you can only tell in the middle of a story that you're already doing. Little tiny character kind of moments.
Yes, that's what I liked about these last two FF issues as well, is that, they do, these are great character moments, issues. And that is what I like about what I'm seeing in both series. The dinner with Contessa and Nick is another perfect example of that. That was an excellent issue, for example.
All right. Well, then you'll like issue 15 of Secret Warriors.
Good to hear.
Part 5 of Wake the Beast. So, that book is really special, obviously, because it's my first kind of ongoing series that I've ever done, and I was very ambitious at the start, and I think we screwed up a little bit in the second arc.
How so?
Well, there's this thing where you, like I was telling you kind of earlier, where you show up at Marvel and you try and make people happy, right? Instead, they hired you to tell stories in the way that you tell stories. I mean, they hired you for you, not. They'll always have Captain America.
Right.
They don't worry about Captain America going anywhere. But they hire you to kind of be you, and you forget that when you first show up there, and you want to make everybody happy, and if there's a big event going on, you want to cross over into it. And if something's happening in another book, you want to reference it in yours and show everybody that you care about continuity. And that, you just do these things, and it turns out to be a mess. And my second arc has got a two-issue crossover with the Thunderbolts and a flashback issue with Dark Avengers. And it's don't get me wrong, I pulled it off to some extent,
mm-hmm.
but it's not as strong as it could have been if I would have just...
done your own thing.
If I would have just told the story straightforward the way that it needed to be told. And that's my fault, and I've learned from that, and I won't ever do that again.
Okay.
But I think the conclusion that Secret Warriors is headed toward is dramatic and huge and big, and it matters, and it's final and conclusive, and it is it's like Nick Fury, it's mean as shit but heroic, it's triumph and tragedy. The book ends the way that it started, and I'm very, very happy about it. And Tom and I got on the phone this week and talked about it a little bit, and we want to make sure that we get to the end. And we're not concerned about the numbers. We're going to make it. But, we want to do some stuff to maybe kick things up a little bit. And one of those is the last ride of the Hound Commandos arc. It'll be kind of a nostalgic, heroic age story, and so we'll brand it as that. And that starts right when the heroic age starts, so that all kind of works out. And,
okay.
And it does feature Cap, which is kind of cool, and it's a World War II awesome story, And on top of that, Oh, they let me do, like, variant covers. I'm doing my first Marvel covers.
That's interesting. Very cool. Well, now, your design, I think, is one of the obvious eye-catching things that people gravitated to with Pax Romana and Nightly News to start with. So, yeah, I think it'll be very interesting to see what you do with variant covers.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I'm going to take some more money from my corporate masters as well.
Attaboy.
In the process. I tricked them. I hoodwinked them. So.
Well, you got to, you know, there's got to be some sort of, you know, big graph, you know, encompassing poster that has all of the little bells and whistles that you're throwing into, you know, the Nick Fury world that you've kind of thrown in there with Leviathan and the Grand Wheel.
We may do a thing in the last trade, which would be the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe the fifth trade.
Okay.
It's either the fifth or the sixth trade. We may do something in the back of that that's a timeline for the whole shebang, you know, so people can see that, you know, step by step, this was very, you know, we knew what we were doing from issue one kind of deal. You know, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, you know, they let me design the trades anyway.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. That's really, you know, and forgive me, I haven't seen the trade because I've been buying the monthlies. So what kind of, did you put bonus stuff in the first trade?
No, I just designed it all. So it all kind of, pick it up.
I'll check it out.
If you see the trade, just pick it up and flip through it. You'll see what I'm talking about. And then I just finished doing the first Fantastic Four trade too. You know, so, you know, I had to yell about it, but Marvel is certainly letting me, I mean, they don't want me wasting my time doing design work whenever I could be writing. I mean, that's what I'm under contract for.
Sure.
They know that, you know, they know that that's something that I'll fuss about, I guess, and they appreciate my effort, or, and I don't know what the consensus is that we've reached, but we're in a happy place.
Well, it's kind of like when, you know, there was certainly obviously the Storenko era of S.H.I.E.L.D. that really, you know, you've got your Kirby beginnings, you've got your Storenko look, that where design was obviously such a paramount to the series and really making it, you know, go up a notch from its start. Then you've got even the Chaykin, you know, years, whether it's been his, you know, the occasional covers to the Scorpion connection. What was the, was it called the Scorpion Connection? I can't remember the original graphic novel he did back.
I can't remember right now.
But you know what I'm talking about.
If you wouldn't have asked, I'd have told you.
But that's the thing. I think with certain artists and certain writers, they've been able to put, very few writers, actually, they've been able to put their stamp on S.H.I.E.L.D. And you, with your design background and stuff, it's a great opportunity. And clearly with, you know, from the start with Secret Warriors, you've started to throw little elements in that I think a lot of future writers and artists, you know, will pick up on. And there's some interesting threads to play with here.
Well, when Brian and I started, you know, we said the goal was to tell, you know, a Nick Fury story that people will be talking about, you know, 15, 20 years from now. You know, like when people talk about Fantastic Four and they say, you know, Jack and Stan, and, you know, they always bring up Byrne, of course, and, you know, they bring up Wade and Ringo. I mean, you want to do a work that people say, hey, well, what are the best Nick Fury or Fantastic Four stories ever? You know, you don't want people to say, not Jonathan. I mean, you don't want people to say that.
I keep going back and forth on Nick Fury versus S.H.I.E.L.D., the Bob Harris story, and I'm not picking on Bob because I actually like that story.
Mm-hmm.
But that story, it's like, I wonder if, you know, again, it was interesting timing. That was when, you know, Baxter Edition or Dark Knight format, special, you know, $5.95 or $4.95 books when they were coming out bi-monthly and everything. It was really an event still. And it had been so long since a really good Nick Fury story had happened and stuff. It was exciting. Plus, seeing Nick, much like the beginning of Secret Warriors and even Secret Invasion, finds himself against the power brokers of the Marvel Universe, is back against the wall and really having to, you know, do the job himself and come up with, you know, resources that he didn't have before, that he couldn't rely on before. And I think that's partially my excitement about this story. My fear was, I think, with Secret Warriors was I wanted a new Nick Fury book, but I did kind of want you know, Dum Dum to be there, and I wanted Gabe to be there, and I wanted a lot of the old, you know, and the contestant to be there as well. But how was it for you bringing that balance? Because clearly they haven't been forgotten. They are part of the series. And you've also got, you know, the young kids that he's trying to groom in this new unit as well. But tell me about the balance of, you know, keeping the old guard happy, but also, you know, introducing these new characters and putting flesh on them.
John, I think it just comes down to writing what you want to write. Certainly the direction of the book was not, you know, if Brian had just done it himself, it was clearly going to be Nick Fury and the kids' book. I mean, that's what it was going to be, and I didn't want to just do that. And you know, shit, it was my only Marvel book at the time, and I didn't know if I was going to get anything else. Why not swing for the fence and try and do everything you want to do? And you know, I was pretty clear up front. Who do you want to be in the book? Everybody, you know. And what do you want the scope to be, or how, you know? I want it to be huge. I want it to be grand. You know, I want to tell a story that matters. And you can't do that in six issues. I mean, you can, but not if you're talking about something. You can't write an Avengers story in six issues that's really, really, really going to matter nowadays because of the way comics are drawn and the way that just the way the system works. It's just very, very difficult to do. And I wanted to do something that matters. So, you know, if it's not a new property a miniseries that's a new thing or a miniseries that's a total reboot, it's really, really tough to do something short format as with the minutia in it that a good spy story should have, you know?
Absolutely.
You can't have... The three-act structure is awesome for a miniseries if you want to do something that's very cool, but if you want to do something that just twists and turns and snakes back on itself and then lurches in a completely different direction, you just can't do it with the kind of characterization that people expect nowadays in that small... you know, that small sample size. So it's you know, I got to do what I wanted to do, and I don't know. I think it's a decent book, it's a solid book. So you know, a lot of it though, John, too, is, and you were kind of talking about this, you know, when you were talking about Nick Fury versus S.H.I.E.L.D. When you're putting together something like this, you know how continuity nerds are. You want the book to matter, so it's got to be sort of in continuity, mm-hmm. But you can't, like, whenever I'm putting the book together, and I do all my research, like for FF as well, I don't treat everything the same. There's no way that you're going to tell me that some shitty Nick Fury series that came out in 1995 matters as much as the Stranko stuff.
I agree.
I mean, I don't care that they were all went through editorial and all of it got checked, and they both exist in the back market. They are not equally important, and I feel the same way about FF. And that's kind of that colors my work as well. So,
I think that's fair. I mean, and you're right. I say that sometimes about trades. You know, after something's come out monthly, and I understand it's the new product and everything, but not every story is trade worthy. And by the same token, not every arc should be branded as continuity. And I almost think that if you are making a trade, you almost owe it to yourself to say that you are acknowledging that this is continuity. I know that's not what Marvel says when they put something in trade, and really all they're doing is it's part of the recouping, you know, the expense of paying you guys to put the book out and everything. But, you know, still, it is that feeling of, you know, if it's being put on a bookshelf, to me it should matter, and obviously I believe every creative team sets out to do that. But you're right. I think, unfortunately, you know, hey, it's that combination of you've got to make the donuts no matter what each day, and also, you know, you're also trying to tell a very important story that like you say will stand the test of time.
Indeed.
Have we talked enough about the S.H.I.E.L.D. miniseries? Does it start in April?
Yeah, it starts in April. It's not a miniseries. It's an ongoing. you know, we just don't know how long it's going to be going.
Okay.
I'll say this. It is easily the best thing that I've written. Easily. Easily the best thing at Marvel, and I think it's better than all of my indie stuff as well, just because I'm a better writer now.
What do you think? What have you learned now that you didn't know then? Can you quantify it?
Sure. I don't think people. I think I shouldn't love my words, each and every one of them, so much that they should cover up all the art.
Okay.
Even when it's my art that's being covered.
Okay.
I think I'm better. I don't think I'm better at plot. I don't actually work at any of that stuff. That's kind of intuitive. I don't know why. I don't get why that's so easy for me. But I try not to think about it too much, or demystify it, or whatever, or break it down to its chemical composition, because I don't want to screw it up.
Okay.
But just language-wise, I've writing with a theme is a little bit. I'm better at that now, and I think I'm better at actually letting the book breathe a little bit more. Not like in a decompressed kind of, you know, you just paid $2.99 for that. Are you fucking kidding me? Kind of way.
Sure.
But just allowing there to be moments on the page, you know, where it's just the art. And that was really hard for me early on, because I felt like, I, you know, a book was going to get canceled, or I wasn't going to make it, or this was going to be the last comic that I ever got to do. And so I wanted stuff to be going on every panel and stuff like that. And I think my rhythm is better now. And I just think that, you know, Nightly News was the first thing I'd ever written. It's the actual first thing that I'd ever written, full story. And, you know, that's just not going to be the best thing that you ever do. You're just going to get better doing something. And I feel like I'm in better shape now. I think I can produce a little bit quicker and a little bit better, and I'm more efficient. And I don't know, all the stuff that comes from kind of cross-training, you know?
Refresh my memory. Who's your artist on the S.H.I.E.L.D. series?
His name is Dustin Weaver.
Man, I'm going to have a link at the Word Balloon website to the G4 segment that Blair Butler did, mm-hmm. because the images of 6th century Galactus storming on China or Japan, I'm not sure which countryside's being terrorized, but it was fantastic. I mean, very exciting.
Yeah, he's a hell of an artist, man. I mean, he's going to be big time. He's going to be as big time as he wants to be. I don't know how big he actually wants to be, though. I think he just wants to draw stuff that he thinks is cool, which isn't always necessarily the biggest books, right?
How did you guys get together?
The editor, Nick Lowe.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, hooked me up with him, and he actually wasn't the first guy that we were going to have. We were going to have this other cat that I was okay with, but when I saw Dustin's stuff, I was like, you know, oh hell yes. And then when we got his comps and his sketches in for the first issue, we were like, okay, this is you know, rock and roll, man. I mean, this is going to be some good stuff. First issue is amazing. I mean, the art is absolutely beautiful. Christina Strain is going to be coloring it, and she's of course going to do a great job. I'm very happy that we have a female colorist on this book, because it feels like it needs that kind of subtle, warm, kind of earthy palette that a lot of guys just don't give you outside of Dave Stewart or Diamarda or somebody like that.
Okay.
Just real natural kind of real natural thing for her. I don't know, man. It's an amazing story. It's the history of the Marvel Universe. It's all the titans of science, Da Vinci and Michelangelo and Ben Franklin and Isaac Newton, all of them, as the you know, the kind of the first generation of superheroes before there were mutants and metahumans and all that kind of shit. There were just these guys that were smarter than everybody else and knew a whole bunch of shit, and they're the guys that saved our asses. And you know, it turns out that they're even more special than we first believed. You know, Renaissance men, right?
Absolutely. So key points in time, they were called upon to save the world.
Yeah, to put it lightly. I mean, it's we do a lot of really cool stuff, man. I mean, I know that the first time Galactus showed up was, I can't remember, what was the FF, I can't remember.
Yeah, it was in the 40s or 50s.
Yeah,
it was, you know, that,
which issue
that
it was.
Yeah, that classic Silver Surfer story,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that's the first time Galactus shows up, but we find out that that he actually showed up before then, but there's no record of it because that it happened when Galileo was around. And, you know, the Gregorian calendar got started, and the way that they were able to make the Gregorian calendar is that there were 10 days that they just dropped out of the history of the world. 10 days so bad that everyone forgot them, and it's the first time Galactus showed up.
You know, outstanding.
That's why there's no record. And, you know, that's kind of the way the whole book is. There's a lot of hard history in there.
Fantastic.
That just we've kind of tweaked just a little bit to make it fantastic. Like, for example, the Savage Land gets discovered. There was a polymath, a Renaissance man, a Russian one, and he postulated the existence of Antarctica, you know, 90 years before we discovered it. And instead of him postulating it, you know, he goes there and he discovers the Savage Land before anyone else does. You know, and it's like that. It's like real history pertaining to real areas and really real locations. And we just kind of smoothly wrap it into the Marvel Universe. And then beyond, and that's kind of the setting of the book. You know, that's just the cool shit that happens on the periphery. And the story is about this kid who with mysterious origins, but obviously I'm going to clue you in here, it matters to the story, who is what his real story is. But there's this kid that and he's called a human dynamo, and you know, it's basically his story. He's us, and we're kind of viewing the whole thing through his eyes, and you know, we find out about this secret organization, the SHIELD, you know, the Brotherhood of the SHIELD, the, you know, Council of the Immortals, kind of, you know, high language, multiple title thing that we've got going on there, because perhaps it may split and diverge and form other organizations that tie into other books. Maybe. Not promising that, but you know, the main story is about these men who pushed humanity forward. It's about the human engine of discovery and all that, and so it's a very, very cool book, John.
Dude, it sounds like it, and being the history fan that I am, loving things like Da Vinci Code and the truth behind the Freemasons, the myth behind the Freemasons, I can see a lot of elements of that playing into this world that you're creating. And shame on you for teaching as well as entertaining at the same time. You know, that's
yeah, right.
No place for that in comic books, sir.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to curb my instincts there, but, you know.
Will we see preview art then in the next previews, in the February previews?
Yeah. I think I'm pretty sure we've got the inside front cover and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, very cool.
I mean, we're getting a pretty big push from Marvel, so. You know, this is a book that's important. Did Joe love the pitch, and the guys at Marvel West really love the pitch, and I know Marvel's got a lot of shit coming out in April.
Oh, really? Is April a key month?
I don't know.
Well, I guess so with the Heroic Age and everything.
We put out a lot of shit every month.
That
anyway.
I was going to say, yeah.
But, and some of it is outstanding high grade, you know, stuff. And,
sure.
And some of it is not. And, some, and, you know, every now and then we miss and we put out something bad. I have a hard time believing that Marvel's going to put out a book that's better than this in April. And I know my benefactor, Brian Bendis, has got some Siege stuff coming out and whatnot, but and I don't mean to shame him, but I feel like this is probably going to be the best book that Marvel puts out in April. I really do. I feel that strongly about it. And if I'm wrong, it's got to be in the top three. So
there you go. Well, it's no, man, it's an exciting idea. And like I said, for people who haven't seen the art, I'll put the video clip up and from Blair's report on GA4, and I think they'll understand why this is an exciting thing. And yeah, man, I really hope that sales allows you to tell the story that you want to tell.
I've decided I'm going to do that anyway.
Attaboy.
You know, just hopefully, hopefully it's just not too much drama. Hopefully people buy it and people like it, and we can just, yeah, we can just dance. You know, if not, then you know it's got to turn into something else. But I don't think I'll compromise on this. It's just, it feels like this feels, this honestly feels like something that people would buy a decade from now. You know, and I'm just not going to dumb it down or make it mediocre just because, you know, we don't have the numbers. It'll just have to be one of the better, you know, one of the special unfinished series. Damn, I wish we could get more Jonathan Hickman, Dustin Weaver Shield.
At least you got two sales, I know, right away. You got Blair Butler and me.
Oh, I thought you were talking about my mom.
And your mom. Okay, there's three of us.
Yeah, she's easily my biggest. This is kind of funny. My little sister went to the local comic book shop in Columbia. It's Heroes and Dragons. It's where Chris Sims works. He's the ISB guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know Chris?
I'm aware of him, yeah.
And she went in and bought like half the copies of the first Nightly News when it came out. And I had to explain to her that she just fucked me, because that's people that aren't going to be able to buy the first issue that aren't going to get the second issue now. You know, if you're not going to go in there and buy half the copies every time, then you're not really helping me out, sis. I love you, but I didn't say that to her. I said thank you. I love you.
Well, you know exactly. They mean well when they do stuff like that. Exactly. Will we be hearing, do you think, more from Marvel as far as, you know, digital stuff this year? Or, you know, they're still figuring out the tablet.
Well, I mean, we're going to see 14 or 15 of them this year.
Okay.
Computers. I was telling Bendis the other night, actually, we were kind of talking about it for a minute, and I told him there's going to be a lot of blood in the water this year as far as manufacturers go. A lot of people are going to get fucked bad, but we're going to do good.
Right, I agree with that. I think content will move on to whatever platform survives. This is like HD DVDs and Blu-ray, you know, a couple of years ago, or certainly Betamax and VHS back in the day.
You know, Disney is going to probably be, you know, kind of going after their own plan as far as digital content. I'm not sure that. I'm positive it doesn't sync up with what Marvel's going to do. So it's almost like whatever they do, they're in two channels, so the migration should be pretty easy one way or the other, whatever wins.
I hear you. No, I agree. Well, that's the thing. I think, luckily, content, no matter what happens from a platform standpoint, content's going to win. I really believe that.
Maybe. I mean, yes, absolutely. I agree with that completely. What I don't like is, I don't want to see a price war on content.
I agree.
I don't want to see an inflated price point.
I completely agree.
I don't want to see stripped down versions of content. I like, that's one of the things I like about Rance's product, is that it's rich media. It's not just JPEGs.
Yes.
So I don't want to see cheap. I don't want to see dumb content. Like I said, I don't want to see shitty interfaces. I don't want to see bad. I don't want to see bad containers for the product. I want an easy shopping experience. I want a smart shopping experience, and on top of that, I want a communal experience. You know, that we can use to market our own products.
Well, and also, I think it's important that, especially to begin with, the digital content not only has to fit this tablet, but give us content that, I agree, shouldn't just be simple JPEGs that you move around, but I also think don't force people to buy the $1,000 piece of equipment to run this stuff right away, because I just, you know, I'm a late adapter because of that. I was holding out on the iPhone because of its limitations. You know, the connectability of AT&T is a deal breaker for me.
I actually bought my first iPhone right around Christmas, I guess.
There you go.
I finally got around to getting one because my contract was finally up, and it gave me an excuse to buy some shit for my wife for Christmas, so I didn't have to buy anything else.
Or
romantic.
go back 10 years when the first MP3 players came out.
Yeah.
And, you know, the time in Rio, you know, used to cost $700 or whatever for 250 gig, you know, megs of memory and stuff like that. It's stupid. You know, I can appreciate being the first kid on your block with the new gizmo. But, I mean, the iPhone was a perfect example where literally not even 6 months after it came out, they were already saying, hey, wait a minute, iPhone 2 is just around the corner.
Well, we'll see. I'm telling you, it's going to be a bloodbath for manufacturing.
I agree.
This year. It is going to be an absolute bloodbath, and it's going to be glorious and wonderful because it's innovation in its rawest and most primal form. You know, new product meets free market economy. Nothing more brutal and bloody than that. Anyway, I think comics are going to win. I think what we're talking about now is the degree to which we're going to win.
I agree.
I think we're talking about, what's the concern for collateral damage. And by that, of course, I'm talking about the direct market and how that's going to work. We'll see, man. I mean, we'll see. I mean, a lot of this is going to come down to, are Marvel and DC willing to rock and roll on a monthly basis? I mean, do they have the guts? Do they have the foresight? Or do they think it's the wrong thing to do to ship the same time, to ship digitally the same day as their printed comics? I mean, that's going to be a huge, huge point. But we'll see. We'll see, man. It's going to be very interesting.
And it's something that really, I think music is really the only... Well, and I guess maybe now finally, I guess movies are starting to act that way, but not quite. I mean, they are from a hard DVD versus digital copy standpoint. They are releasing it on the same day. But if you talk to somebody like Mark Cuban, who's, you know,
he would say that the movie should come out the same day in the theaters and in the shops and digitally download, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see. I personally, I'm an advocate for, I don't care as long as they buy a copy of it.
I agree with that.
I mean, a user is a user. But I don't think with our antiquated kind of system in the direct market, and the dependence on it and the importance of it. I mean, I'm not trying to diminish the direct market at all. God knows I make my living off of it, and I love those guys. But I think they're going to eventually end up as trade shops as opposed to monthly periodicals.
I think you're right.
Distribution points. So.
Well, and also, you know, this last week of the year is a perfect example of that. And that isn't the store's fault at all.
Yeah, no, they got screwed. There's just no way around it.
Right, and I'll say it. Dumb idea, Diamond. Dumb idea at the worst time of what's going on with the big picture. With the tablet coming, with everyone, the entire year was anticipation of the digital market. That's all it was always in the conversation for the entire year of 2009. And you know, to end the year and say, guess what, kids, there's not going to be any hard copies for you this last week. Really, really stupid.
Yeah, you don't want a drug user to go a week without getting a drug, because then they might come clean. I agree.
Exactly. Yeah. So
that ain't good for business.
No, sir. So. Well, with that bitter pill, let's wrap up. But as always, man, I enjoy our conversations. They're always interesting, as your stories are, and keep looking forward to what's going on in Fantastic Four and Secret Warriors and. Wait with high anticipation for the debut of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think it's a very interesting idea, and I really look forward to what you guys have got cooking up.
Cool.
Nice conversation with John Hickman, and that will do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. John Sutcher's reminding you to come to wordballoon.com for our archive of well over 300 interviews with comic creators, folks in animation, television, and film right here on wordballoon.com, and the conversations are waiting for you. You can also find us at iTunes. Feel free to subscribe to the feed, leave us a review, rate the show if you'd like to. Questions or comments about the show, reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com, or you can follow me on Twitter, John Wordballoon, and on Facebook under my name, John Sundress. Until next time, thanks a lot for listening. More great shows coming up this month. Wordballoon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2010.